Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Martin Luther King Drive was named to honor the civil rights leader, but some say the roadway has become a pathway of disrespect. How those who do so want to change that in a few moments. But first, community civic health. What is it and how is it measured? In fact, it has been measured in Missouri in general and in Kansas City and St. Louis in particular. Civic health focuses on how Missourians engage in civic activity. How do we stack up, and why is it important? A new report gives us a pretty good picture. The National Conference on Citizenship has released a statewide civic health index in collaboration with six Missouri universities. And joining us to talk about the report and its findings are two of its authors, Amanda Moore McBride, Associate Professor and Associate Dean for Social Work at the Brown School, as well as Director of the Gephardt Institute for Public Service and Research and Director for the Center for Social Development at Washington University. She joins us by phone from Washington, D.C. Mike Stout is Professor of Sociology and Anthropology at Missouri State University. He joins us from the studios of KSMU in Springfield. With me in studio is Rick Skinner, the Vice President of the United Way's Volunteer Center here in St. Louis, which helps connect people to volunteer opportunities. Thank you all so much for being with us.
My
pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.
Amanda, I'd like to begin with you. Give me your definition of civic health, if you would.
Civic health pertains to our level of social engagement, how we connect to our neighbors and those that live within our communities, and it can be informally. It can be helping someone out who needs it, but it can also be formal through means of volunteerism. It also includes political action, and that political action can be traditional politics, thinking about electoral and judicial politics, but it also includes citizens' voice in the political process, be it through conversations, again, informally over the dinner table and with friends, or through advocacy efforts, either through attending public meetings or contacting public officials. And civic health would be having more of those things.
Is any one of these components more important than another?
I think majority of the research demonstrates that you need both. One of the things that's most distressing about the data on Missouri and our respective regions on either side of the state is that we're doing pretty well on the social engagement. We're doing less well on the political engagement. So as if we think about both social and political as being necessary, then we need to give more attention to the health of our political engagement.
We can get into more specifics on that in a couple of moments. But, Mike, let me turn to you. How is all of this measured?
We use data that was provided by the U.S. Census Bureau, the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They do a supplemental survey on civic and political engagement once per year, which is collected at the same time that information on unemployment and other characteristics of the population are obtained. So we use that information, and we compiled the data from that for the years 2010 through 2012 into the report that we released on Saturday.
Is there a profile of the person who engages more than those that person who does not?
Yeah, the person who engages more tends to be more likely to be somebody who volunteers for an organization in the community. They're more likely to have frequent interactions with their neighbors and friends and families and to work together to solve problems in the community. They're more likely to sit down and have dinner with other members of their household and their families on a regular basis where they discuss issues of what's going on in their community. And I would say that they're also more likely to discuss politics, work on campaigns, be registered to vote, and to get involved in the political process in other ways as well.
Rick Skinner, why is all of this important?
We're real excited about the results from this study because it does confirm what we've known for quite some time, that St. Louis has a long history of giving back in our community. And as it was stated in the report, how volunteerism is a critical component of that, of how do you make a difference in our community by lending a hand, whether it's on a one-time basis or on an ongoing basis, engaging students, engaging employee groups, families, people from visiting out of town, where they have a centralized resource to volunteer. And we do that through United Way's volunteer management platform, which is called STL Volunteer, and finding great ways to not only make a difference on a short-term basis but on a long-term basis too.
And obviously you have no quarrel with the assertion that volunteerism is a huge part of this whole civic health equation.
Absolutely. We were seeing in the study that in Missouri that it ranks 15th in the nation as far as volunteerism rates in the nation, but then diving deeper and looking at the St. Louis region in particular, seeing that 32% of St. Louis residents volunteer, which is higher than the national average. And looking at other studies from a recent report from the Corporation for National Community Service on volunteerism in America, they rank St. Louis as the eighth largest MSMA organization. We're not the eighth largest city population-wise, and that says something about this region, that we are a very caring, giving community, both philanthropically as well as helping one another through volunteerism.
Amanda, how would you explain that on the basis of your research?
I think there's two components, really. One is that we are a tight-knit community. People care for one another. When you look at the organizations that St. Louisans in particular that are more likely to be involved in, it's religious organizations, of which we have many. And then it's through schools, and we also have many of those. So we have two institutional structures that mobilize that care and concern for one another through their organized activities. I think the second component is, in as much as there's we're the show me state, we're also a little bit of show you. And I have to applaud efforts by the United Way, Focus St. Louis, the Nine Network that have done so much, particularly since these data were first being collected in 2002, to mobilize the St. Louis community to action. So there's the traditional forms that we've had through these institutional structures like churches and synagogues and schools, but then there's mobilization happening over the last decade around particular issues that impact the region. And one of particular note is the American Graduate Initiative that was launched by the Nine Network that has done so much to mobilize the corporate community and its employees, to mobilize faith groups, to mobilize average citizens who want to tutor and volunteer in schools.
And Mike, how does the rest of the state stack up?
On most indicators, the state of Missouri is pretty much right in the middle of the distribution on most of these indicators. We're, you know, kind of ranked in the mid-20s for most things. In the top 50% for all of our indicators of social capital or connectedness, with the exception of actually sitting down and having dinner regularly with members of the household. So I would say for the most part, the report shows that in the state of Missouri overall, we're doing okay. I mean, we're not doing worse than most, but we're not necessarily doing better than most either.
You know, I think this is the fourth time in our brief conversation here that you've mentioned sitting down at the dinner table and talking. Why is that so generally important?
The research demonstrates that for political engagement in particular, that if you follow someone's life trajectory, they will say, I vote or am involved in politics because we discussed politics at the dinner table. This is just classic civic education from our number one teachers, right? Our parents and our guardians, those that are shepherding us through our development as youth, they role model for us. How do you come to understand the world around you and your roles and responsibilities within it? So the discussing politics is really important. I do want to highlight what Mike has said, though, is that we score low on this. Missourians are less likely to do this, and that's of concern over the long term. So if the young people of today are not having those experiences, might that erode their political or social engagement over time? But then also, because I think it's in the fabric of our culture, in many ways, I'm from Arkansas, and I was taught not to discuss religion or politics over the dinner table, and especially over the holidays. And I think there's an element of this that we need to embrace that is respectful. How do we have civil conversations around thorny social and political issues and embrace that as our responsibility as citizens?
You know, as you've been speaking, Amanda, I've been thinking, and there are some concerns, obviously, about this kind of interaction. It seems to me we're hearing more and more that fewer and fewer families are sitting down at the dinner table at all anymore, that this is kind of a lost practice.
That's right. That's right.
That's a source of concern, obviously. Mm-hmm.
That's right, which may be concerning not just for civic health, but physical health as well.
Right. Rick, you've been nodding throughout Amanda's dialogue there.
I was reflecting on how volunteerism could be a way to bring families together. So we know that we're all busy with soccer practice and this meeting and that meeting, and it's hard to get us all together. But by volunteering as a family, even if it's just for a couple of hours, you can really make a difference in whatever category you're interested in, whether it is helping youth or providing services to seniors. And through United Way's STL volunteer platform, we have a way to engage somewhere that might be right in your neighborhood or, you know, on a specific day that might be convenient for the family. And that's a way to get the conversation started again.
Yeah. Mike, can we compare what you've learned in this most recent report with previous reports?
Yes, we can, although a few of the indicators were new in this report, so we don't have previous time points for them. But for the most part, we haven't seen a whole lot of movement in the indicators in the most recent report that was released last Saturday. We're still pretty much about in the middle of the pack when it comes to most of these indicators. And we can't directly compare the question on sitting down to dinner because they actually changed the wording on that between the last time we did the report and this time, which interestingly had a pretty big effect on where we were ranked on that indicator as well. Because one specified specifically sitting down with family, the new version specifies sitting down with other members of the household. And so that created different responses, and which could lead to some of these minor differences. And it's important to keep in mind that with the sitting down to dinner regularly indicator, we're only about 2 percentage points lower than the national average. But relative to other states, it turns out that that's actually a pretty big difference on the continuum. So there's not a whole lot of differences across the states on that. So I don't know necessarily that we want to ring all kinds of alarm bells about that, though it is concerning that we're in the bottom 10 states for that. And we may want to just kind of think about what some of those implications are, as well as some of the implications of the fact that there's research showing that we're more connected, we're less connected and more socially isolated at the national level than we have been in years past as well, which has an impact on a lot of these other things that we're seeing going on with community involvement and political participation.
I want to pick up on a couple of the points that you raised, but I have to take a break. Let's do that now. We're talking about civic health and on the basis of a report just recently issued, which has measured that both in St. Louis and Kansas City and statewide, actually. My guests are Professor Amanda Moore McBride, Associate Dean for Social Work at the Brown School at Washington University. She also wears several other hats at WashU. She joins us from Washington, D.C. Mike Stout, from whom you just heard, is Professor of Sociology and Anthropology at Missouri State University. He joins us from Springfield. And Rick Skinner is Vice President of United Way's Volunteer Center. He is here with me in studio. Back to continue the conversation, if you'd like to get in on it, we'd love to hear from you. 382-8255 is our number. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on air. Back in just a moment, this is St. Louis on the air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Welcome back. We'll get back to our conversation on civic health in just a moment, but here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio and the Beacon Newsroom following today. Missouri's transportation director will outline the financial woes facing the state's highway program this afternoon during a conference that is also expected to feature a pitch from supporters of a proposed transportation tax initiative. Governor Jay Nixon today defended his call for about $200 million in bonds to build new mental health facilities at the Fulton State Hospital. A key senator has called Nixon's proposal extremely troublesome because it wouldn't go to a vote of the people. And a Belleville man has been sentenced to 10 years in prison for his role in a drug trafficking ring. Prosecutors say also involved a judge who later resigned after being accused of heroin possession. You can hear more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day on stlouispublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation on civic health. We are talking with Professor Amanda Moore McBride of Washington University, Mike Stout of Missouri State University, and Rick Skinner, Vice President of the United Way's Volunteer Center. Amanda, I'm going to come back to you to pick up on the political discussion here. One of the things, and I think Mike alluded to this, that is happening today, as you well know, is this issue of polarization. And I'm just wondering how that plays into this whole connectivity idea of people becoming more engaged when they seem to be getting angrier.
I think polarization is part of it, but I actually think it's a more insidious issue, that it's really the complexity of the political machinery. You talk to people who, you ask them, why are you not politically engaged? And they'll give you two answers. One, I don't know how to be. And the second is, I'm not sure it would make a difference. And on the first point, this complexity of the political engine, we're not teaching people about how to be engaged, what their roles and responsibilities are. In the last 10 years, the states have gone from all of them requiring civics for high school graduation to now we're down to 25 states. That's alarming. On the other side of it, the issue of having incentives, it's difficult to not see the immediacy of your action. I think we're strong in volunteerism because often when you engage in a volunteer act, you see the smile on someone's face, you see the tangible outcomes. But in the political process, it's messy, it's hard work, and often the outcomes are not what you may want. And so I think there needs to be more commitment, not just to civility, which relates to the polarization, but a commitment around civic education and connecting people to meaningful ways to engage in the political process.
It would seem to me, given the climate today, and Mike, let me just turn to you for this, and Amanda, I'll just certainly jump in on it, that a lot of people have lost respect for politicians because of this lack of civility, if you will.
Yeah, I think the lack of civility is a part of it. I think another part of it is that the way, especially the way that our election process works and the way that our political institutions have been kind of influenced a lot by the idea, you know, it used to be in America that it was the idea of one person, one vote when we were talking about politics. And that implies that everybody had an equal say in the outcome of elections. More and more, as we've been seeing heavy investment in our political institutions by large special interests and lots of money being put into the process, that money has basically made it a system less about one person, one vote, and more about a system of $1, one vote. And what that ends up doing is it kind of alienates people who don't have a lot of dollars to spend but rely on our political institutions for resources that you know, kind of help provide those ladders of opportunity for people. And I think that there's a level of growing cynicism that leads to inequality in who gets involved in politics, who participates in politics, and who really thinks that politicians and our political institutions can solve our problems because of the way that now our elections are about who has the most money rather than who has the best ideas or who's proposing the best policies. And I think that's really alienated a lot of people from the process, in addition to the things that Amanda was saying in terms of we don't do a good job with civic education and providing people with the skills that they need to not only get involved, but to get effectively involved so that they are making that difference. And so I think that there's a combination of what we're seeing, the effect of rising levels of economic inequality on our political process, in addition to the fact that we're not putting as much of an emphasis on civic education as we should be.
Rick Skinner, I don't know if you want to get into the political discussion part of this here, but there are also efforts in any number of states, including Missouri, to make it more difficult for some people to vote.
I think this is a great opportunity to see what a collective impact can have in our region. So efforts to encourage folks to get to the polls, so volunteers having the opportunity to connect with citizens so they have the opportunity to do so. I know that one of the volunteerism initiatives that we have to help strengthen assets is to provide tax assistance for those that are maybe eligible for earned income tax credit, et cetera. So engaging volunteers in ways that will help these indicators that the report is talking about so we can move the needle forward. So if you care about education, if you care about helping people live their best possible lives, volunteering is a way to make that happen. So this is a really this year of 2014, after this, now that this report is out, is what are the next steps? How can we make a difference? And so Amanda earlier mentioned the partnership with Nine Network and the American Graduate. And United Way's STL Volunteer will be the call to action after every program as that's continuing on. So what can I do to help youth succeed? So that's one exciting avenue. Another exciting partnership is, that you probably heard of, was with STL 250 and engaging folks in our celebration of our region's 250th birthday and a goal of engaging 250,000 volunteers and 1 million hours of service. And so that will certainly strengthen our numbers in volunteerism and also raise the awareness of how can my involvement, whether it's for an hour or for an ongoing commitment as a tutor, mentor, et cetera, how can that make a difference? And we hope that will be that way.
Let me put this question to you. Why do some people get involved, engaged, if you will, and others do not?
I would suspect that one reason is if they know how to engage. And so utilizing supports such as United Way's Volunteer Center to learn about where can I connect, where can my family get engaged, whatever that reason might be, just knowing where to start is the first and foremost. And following your passion, knowing that if you have a specific interest, it most likely is going to be a volunteer experience related to that passion so you can get connected, even in a leadership capacity, serving on a board, a committee, et cetera, to just help that conversation move along.
Amanda, could you address that same question in terms of what you found?
Thank you so much for pressing this further. This is a really critical issue. This is a matter of justice. This is one of the reasons that we released the report in honor of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. When you look at the demographic characteristics of who volunteers or who votes, it is those who are of means. They're making more than $75,000 a year. They're women. They're highly educated. And we have to critically ask ourselves then, who's responsible for the care and governance? And it means, in many ways, to be all of us. We need to ensure that there, as Mike said earlier, there is equal representation of voice. And so you've mentioned access and access to voting. I just want to highlight that the president released just yesterday a number of recommendations on how to increase voter access across the United States. And one of them, if you think about someone who is in a lower income situation, they may be working two or three jobs. They've got to take the bus to work. Maybe they've got three or four connections to make all of those jobs knit together. It's very hard then to fit voting within the context of that day. So how can we encourage early voting? How can we make sure that the polling places are staffed with people that are working on efficient processes so that you can fit it into your lunch hour? These are the kinds of institutional responses that we need to make a commitment to as a society. The second piece, and I'll pick up on what Rick just said in terms of these predictors of volunteerism, the number one predictor across most studies is people volunteer because they were asked. Mm-hmm. Someone asked you to volunteer or to donate. And so as we look at these indicators, that means that we are only asking those of means, and instead, those that may be of less means, we are just considering then the subjects of those services. Again, how can we empower them and their voices to be involved in the delivery of the services and in their own development?
Mm-hmm. Mike, anything you want to add to that?
Yes, I completely agree with Amanda that the number one predictor is in terms of getting involved, not just with volunteering, but in getting involved with a range of civic activities, is being asked by somebody you know and trust to get involved. And people who are asked directly are more likely to do that. I would add one thing to that is that part of the reason that we see such big such big educational and economic disparities in who's getting involved and who isn't is that as a society, we are tending to become more and more segregated into groups who share similar characteristics as ourselves. So, for example, neighborhoods are now segregated as much along socioeconomic lines as they are among race lines. And when there's less of that dialogue happening across, you know, for example, people with bachelor's degrees talking to people with high school educations or less, less of those that means that people are having less access to those opportunities for engagement because they're being kind of clustered among the better off parts of our population without the people from some of the worse off parts of our population having access to those networks of information and opportunities.
Yeah.
That brings us to another element here associated with the report, and that is that you make the connection in the report that civic health also has a direct influence on economic vitality. Amanda, I'll turn to you. How so?
Well, it relates to networks. The benefit of having these data over time is that the National Conference on Citizenship was able to focus on the economic downturn and the impact that had. We found that those that were civically engaged were less likely to remain unemployed if they had lost their job during that time. And we're seeing this across a range of findings. I have done research with my colleagues at Washington University around older adults who have retired from employment and they're in volunteer roles, and then they realize, hey, I'm going to live another 20 years. I want to go back to work. And those that are volunteering are more likely than to be employed. So I think it just undergirds that what we've known for a long time. You get your jobs mostly by who you know.
I was going to say, too, thank you, Don. Volunteering, wherever you are in the spectrum of your life, provides new opportunities to learn or to transfer those skills you've learned to others. And so keeping retirees active is a way to just really reflect on how to impart those skills that you've learned along your journey in a volunteer situation. One point that I saw in this study that was really critical, too, regarding volunteering was quality volunteer management requires an investment. And so having not only an experience being meaningful and pushing the needle forward, but also equipping those that work with volunteers to know that they're going to have a successful experience with them. So United Way is really committed to making sure that not only are we helping people live their best possible lives, but also helping all of our agency partners with the tools that they need to equip them for recruitment, training, thanking volunteers, all those different components that make a volunteer experience a quality experience.
Our time is beginning to wind down. I want to ask each of you essentially the same question here as we approach our wrap-up time. And I'll start with you, Mike. What do you want the takeaway to be from this discussion for people who are listening and trying to figure out civic health and their own potential involvement in making it better?
I think there's two things that I want people to take away from this, and it's the reason I got involved with this research in the first place. Number one is that when we tend to think about most of the problems that exist in our world and in our society and in our communities, we focus on either the political system to address those problems or the economic system to address those problems. So we turn to the market, for example, to try to address problems, or we turn to policy to try to address problems. And one of the things that I think gets left out of the discussion when we only focus on those two types of institutions is the role that our communities can play in fixing our own problems and actually taking responsibility and coming together, building those networks and working together to make a positive impact. So one thing I'd like people to take away is to introduce this idea of civic engagement and civil society into the discourse for our collective ability to solve problems, because I think that it's a very valuable resource that doesn't get a whole lot of attention. Often people who are doing this work, it's a thankless job for them. It's not very high paid work, but it has a major impact both on the quality of life and on economic opportunities in the community. So that's the first thing. The second thing that I would like to people to pay specific attention to is the increase in inequality in participation and in social connectivity that we're seeing in our society. As people become clustered into social networks of people who look more like themselves, the opportunities, and as resources such as income, education, and other things like that become clustered into kind of these segregated networks, it cuts off access to opportunity and ladders of mobility for people who would otherwise like to get involved but may not have access to those resources to do so. And so I think we need to focus on intentional programs for making those connections, for providing those opportunities to get people who have been more alienated, who have felt kind of more disenfranchised, to be able to feel like they have a voice in their community and a voice in that process. And so in order to do that, we need to make those connections and help provide opportunities for building those skills. So I think those are the two things that I would say were a major motivation behind doing this report, so we could get that information out there and hopefully inform some of the way that we talk and think about these problems, as well as some programming and policies that we can do to move the needle on some of these indicators.
Amanda, do you want to weigh in on the takeaway?
I hope that our region views this as a call to action in two ways. One, volunteerism or charity is not a substitute for political action. And where we stand on the indicators of political engagement, we've got a long way to go to have representation of voice and to mobilize the political process toward social good. Then the second point is around community mobilization. So I'll just highlight two statistics we haven't talked about. And one is mentoring youth, and one is tutoring or teaching youth. And only 15% of the volunteers in the St. Louis region are engaged in those activities. Yet we know that our public schools need volunteers, but they need them like they need them. So the schools need to be able to say, we need these types of tutors, we need these types of teachers, we need these types of mentors. And to have the schools drive that process means that the volunteerism is being directed toward community problems, where we will hopefully see needles moving and really think about, in both of these areas, political action and in directed volunteerism, that the region itself can improve overall through this type of civic activity.
And Rick Skinner.
Absolutely true. I think this is a great opportunity to see what a collective impact can have in our region. So whether it is addressing a problem about how do we talk about science, technology, education, and mathematics and as tutors, and engaging corporations to go into schools and go into the agencies that work with the kids to really move that needle forward. So I would agree with my colleagues to say taking action is the next step that I want to take away with all this. And one way to do that is by going to stlvolunteer.org to find out what is available right now and to plug in.
Well, I want to thank you all for being with us and talking about this issue. Obviously, it's an important one and something we all should be focusing on, perhaps more than we do. Thanks, Professor Amanda Moore McBride of Washington University, Mike Stout of Missouri State University, Rick Skinner of the United Way's Volunteer Center. Good
thank
to talk
so
to
much.
You all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, dressing up Martin Luther King Drive. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.